we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right. Welcome back to the show. Ruth, how are you?
I'm doing so well. And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. We were just talking right before we started, and these are always just the most funny slides. I mean, we're a very real, transparent podcast. So like we have, you know, you have pre-conversations. So this is the second time we're saying hi. We're saying hi to everyone else for the podcast. but thank you. We were just commenting on how the last conversation we had, we couldn't figure out if it was 21 or 22. We could look back, we'll figure it out. But it was such a rich conversation, and there was a lot of encouragement, feedback, just really had, for anyone that was listening, it just had a lot of impact. And so thank you for taking the time again to come back on and talk about some of not only life updates, which we're going to talk about, but also some of the new work that you have, which we're going to talk about in our conversation. But where are you at? Tell everyone where you're filming from today.
Well, I am at home in Western Colorado. I don't know if you guys know that I live at like 8,000 foot elevation. So it's, yes. It's like in the mountains, and we should be getting snow soon, but there's no snow on the ground yet. But,
wait. You're at 8,000 feet and you don't have snow yet?
Not yet. I mean, We've had snow earlier in the season already, but I thought we would be dealing with a lot of snow already, and there's not any yet. Not this week. It's pretty bare right now. It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
Do people get sick coming to your house? Does like elevation sickness happen at that level or no?
Well, I had a really wonderful photographer here one time doing some work, and she really felt it. But we usually just prep people. We're like, okay, drink lots and lots of water. Mm-hmm. You know, don't underestimate how much you're going to need to rest with that elevation change. But I got to tell you, when I'm traveling and I go to like DFW, I can sprint up those stairs. I'm not taking the escalators. I'm sprinting. And I'm like, babe, look how in shape I am. And he's always like, it's because you're at sea level, honey.
That's so good. I'm trying to think of the, like when you travel, when you come back home, do you have to reacclimate? Is that true? Or how does that work?
Well, the reacclimation is actually mostly just, time zones. That's the killer for me because I go coast to coast quite a bit. And so sometimes on any given week, I could be like in Charleston one day and a few days later over in California, and that
Sure.
is killer. That's killer. And so this last week, I think I made my very last trip of the year, and I was in the LA area, and just with the different flights, because I live in a smaller ski town, and so it's a little hard to get home. There were just multiple 3:30 wake up calls, getting up at 3:30 to travel, and it was a lot. So I'm glad to be
Nice.
home for a little while.
Yeah, in the same time zone. That makes sense for
Yeah.
sure.
And we're f go ahead. You were gonna
No, you
say
go ahead.
we're filming right before Christmas, so we were just talking about this is today's like it's a couple days before Christmas. So thanks for making time out of the holiday plans to chat, because I know like we were just
Absolutely.
talking about like it's a busy season. So, but we want to catch up. Like obviously, a lot of life has happened in the last handful of years. I mean, life happens a lot in just a couple weeks, right?
Right.
But reminding everyone, you're married to your husband, whose name is l introduce everyone to your
Troy.
family. We got Troy,
Yeah,
and
my
then you
husband
have.
Troy, and we've been married for 26 years now. And I really do wish I had warmed up and remembered what we talked about last time, but I'm so glad to know that it served your audience well and that
Yeah.
people resonated with it. So hopefully I won't be redundant today. But
No.
my boys are several years older now. It's interesting because in this time, the season that I'm in, I have six boys. My oldest is now 22. My youngest is 11. We did have
Wow.
them one at a time. I have to answer all the questions all the time. Things like, we weren't just trying for a girl. We do know what causes it, all that stuff. Yes, I did birth them one at a time. But it's interesting with the oldest being 22 now and the youngest being 11. I feel like every year there are massive shifts. So like in the little years, you could have 3 or 4 years go by and you're still in diapers. You're still, kind of like, I don't know, bath time is still kind of a big deal. Bedtime is still a big deal. There's still a lot of chaos at home. And then now I'm in the season where a young man can go from being kind of a little scrawny in 13, 14 to suddenly he's a man. Like I have a 16-year-old who suddenly looks like he's 21. And I can't believe my eyes. Every day I wake up and I see him, and I go, okay, you weren't supposed to grow that fast. Like it's so sudden, and people are driving, and the dynamic keeps changing. And so me, just as transparently as possible, I would just say, I feel like I'm starting over every year. Every year there's something really new about our family. Even though we're all good and we're still the same people, but every year brings such a major change when you're talking about adults, young adults, and seasons changing, and not having even grade school kids in my home anymore.
No, I'm resonating with you so deeply. You're taking us right where I want to go, mostly because I want to pick your brain about this. So our oldest is 15 and a boy, and I so resonate with, like, I still will sometimes catch him out of the corner of my eye and think that he's his dad, because it's,
So wild.
or hear him and think, who is the man in our house?
Sure. That happened fast. It was like he had a 6 month glow up. Like
Yes, he
he got
did.
braces off.
Yes.
He got really tall,
That's
ended
what I'm
up
talking
losing.
about.
Yeah, like lost like 30 pounds of fat and then decided to work out. And so like at the
Right?
same time, and he didn't plan this, but it
Just
went from
happened
one of
all at
those,
once.
it was one of those seasons where all of his cousins that hadn't seen him for a couple months, like family members were like
We went
notably
through that too.
gasping. Yeah, they're just like,
Yeah.
who is this human? And so yeah,
And
we're in
especially
that.
if they're working out and their shoulders start forming. And so
Yes.
suddenly they're like real broad in their shoulders. And they go from like, I don't want to work out to how do I eat 3,000 calories a day? And how do I
Yes.
like take, some protein shakes with me? I am
Oh,
going,
yeah.
wow, what happened here?
Oh, I made our normal weekly Sabbath night pizza. And our son goes, oh, I'm not eating dairy right now. Like,
We're
since
like,
when?
what the
Oh,
heck
my
are you?
goodness. He goes, I think it
Really?
makes my skin break out. So I'm not doing dairy.
He's
Oh,
listening to
yeah.
podcasts,
Oh,
isn't he? Like,
yeah, he
I
is.
mean,
Yep.
our
He
boys
does
start
love
listening to things.
audiobooks. He does love a good audiobook. So
He
he's
sure does.
actually, yeah, he, I think that's actually part of the problem is he's aware and he has food allergies to an extent. And he's just like, this food doesn't make me feel good. And he's like, I do want to have a
Well,
six
good
pack
for
this
him.
summer.
It's great.
Good for
But
him. That's
that
awesome.
is one. And then girls are a whole different type of change that happens.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine if it's boy after boy turning into a man seemingly overnight. And I so resonate with what you're saying of things have to shift and transition. And you have to be able to shift as a parent in how you're approaching them, recognizing you're raising them to leave you. That independence that they are demanding in many ways is a good thing, but we have to help them navigate through it. And I love in your most recent book, which I'm sure we'll talk about, which is actually a children's book, but you wrote kind of a word from the author at the beginning. And I'm just going to quote you to you so that those listening have the context. But you said, "The relationship between parents and children is the most rewarding and the most gut-wrenching. Holding on tightly just to let them go. Teaching them what we know and praying it sticks." And I love this part. "Running ahead of them until they suddenly run ahead of us, ready to take flight." There's so much depth and richness in that. And you can take it wherever you want to go. But will you just unpack that a little bit? That is the journey of being a parent. We're holding on so tightly. Our job is to protect them and to keep them alive. And then our job is to release them fully to not need us. That's like disorienting as a parent in many ways. But so it take is. That wherever you want to take it. What are you learning about that?
Well, you know, first of all, I would say I spent so many years as a new mama trying to figure out what the job really was all about. I was like, I don't feel like I'm good at this. I don't really know what the rules are here. Because somebody, you know, how do you not give birth to a child and it comes with a manual? Like what what are you supposed to do here? And I remember early on just going, how do I not fail and mess up? And so then you read books and you're asking people and you're learning and you're growing. And suddenly you transition into thinking, not even like on purpose thinking this, but I found myself thinking that I'm in the greatest project ever. Like these kids are my project. Like I am like working hard to turn them into wonderful people, to teach them about Jesus, to help them learn to fold laundry. And it's like every day I'm like, there's a goal in mind. There's a goal in mind. There's a goal in mind. And while that's not untrue, I think it was somewhere right in the middle of my first three that I was kind of realizing that I was thinking so much about motherhood in a kind of like a linear, I am trying to get them to the finish line way, and that they were the project. And I was like the person who is going to like do it and like lead them all the way. And somewhere in there, I kind of had this realization that motherhood is sanctifying because it's changing me, and that it's not linear. It's that God is actually using both child and parent to form one another into the image of Christ. And as you are following Jesus, you can't say the same. And so it doesn't become so much like, oh, I'm the expert. This child needs to learn things. Now, early on, sure, like your child does not know how to even, you know, wash their hands unless you teach them. So absolutely. But I think what I'm realizing in this season is if I could go back and tell my young mama self just a little word of advice as I go forward, it would be to consider and pay attention to the journey and not just to the destination. Because if you keep on thinking, okay, the goal is to like get to the place where they don't fight, they do their laundry, they know how to cook. Those things might be great, but you underestimate how much it's about the relationship. It's about what's forming in the home with one another. Because as those things change, as the physical things change, as they do learn how to drive and they drive themselves and they don't need you anymore, your whole world can fall apart if your whole idea of motherhood or parenthood is that you have a job to do. And once that job is no longer feasible or needed the way you imagined it, if that's the way you imagine your job as a parent, is that I have a job to do. My job is to keep them alive, fed, get them into a good college, pay for it, make sure that they are good citizens, like whatever it is. If you think it's that, then you'll find yourself really, really empty or sad or without purpose, if suddenly the seasons change and you realize they need other mentors in their lives, or they may not spend every hour with you, or They can think on their own and they might come to you for counsel, but they may not follow exactly what you say, or they might choose to do something a little different than you. All those things, will shatter you as a parent if you think your only job is to like get them to a certain destination versus cultivating a relationship with them as they go. Because the cultivation of the relationship is what never ultimately. It never fails you as they grow, as they leave the home, if they go to college, if they move down the street, whatever comes, the relationship and the cultivation of the journey of like, who are we with one another? That is actually what lasts regardless and gets to mold and shift and ultimately is rewarding no matter where you go. And so that was a long way of addressing that, but I think I'm on the journey where I'm delighting and testifying to the fact that if you cultivate relationship, you can't get derailed on the parenthood journey. Like it, you can be a little like, wow, that's not like it used to be, but you won't be so disappointed and derailed in who you are or what your relationship is when you're cultivating, when the relationship part is the most important part throughout that journey.
Yeah, I'm curious, like you beautifully said, and you said the word cultivate a couple times. It just makes me curious. Like, obviously, agreed, it probably changes all the time. But right now, let's just stick to this time stamp. How are you cultivating that now? Obviously, it looked different than when they were a little bit younger. But what are some of those key things that you have found that help you cultivate the relationship with your boys?
Well, so I think every family is a little different. So what works in my family is not necessarily a formula for anyone else's. But I would say you have to fight for conversation. That sounds like such a basic thing,
I
but
agree. I
conversation
agree.
is not a given anymore. And when we live in a time where you can text and get the information you need, you can even be funny. Sometimes you're even more enjoyable to talk to when you're on text than in person. It could be so easy to be like, my entire relationship is sending memes, sending funny memes. I send the little animation from my phone and you fill in the thoughts and you're like, wow, she's so funny. Look at the meme she sent me today, or look at the little GIF she sent me. And so it could be really easy to not have a real relationship, but just to fill in with a lot of information or a lot of simple ways to just say, we connected today. There's nothing wrong with sending funny reels or TikToks or whatever it is. If that's part of your relationship, it can be fun and it is funny. And we enjoy those things in our family at some level, but to fight for relationship means a sacrifice of time, and it's an intentionality that will cost you. So, for example, you can't have an intentional conversation with your spouse or your children in your home while texting other people. That those two things can't coexist. You can't be listening to a podcast and troubleshooting all the other things that are going on in your life and have an intentional, meaningful conversation. You probably can't multitask everything that you want to do and cultivate that at the same time. Now, there's some things I can. I actually can go to the grocery store and bring a child along, or have my teen boy get his driving hours in and drive me down to the grocery store and make that entire time about talking to him. But you see how that's still a choice not to return a bunch of emails, to listen to all my texts and respond to everybody. It's not trying to be most efficient. It's just really giving him space and time. And I would say, just parent to parent, since we're kind of linked, like hovering in that teenage years, one of the things I would just say is, if you're intentional about that time, parent, do not think of that time as a time where you get the rundown and the update on how they're doing everything right. What are your grades? Did you finish those things? Did you do what I said you should do? Like, it's really easy to just go like, this is the check-in to make sure you're actually doing all the things that will make me feel better about myself as a mom. Start that conversation with going first, something like, I was thinking today, or I was really surprised by my reaction to this disappointment today. I really couldn't believe I lost my temper, and I'm so sorry that you got kind of rolled into that. But you know what it re really revealed to me, honey? I really, really revealed to me how much my happiness is wrapped up in such and such. When you go first, they could say, wow, Sure, yes. But it also might mean that you give some space, and they most likely, most often, if you normalize that kind of conversation, if you normalize asking questions like, what's the best part of your day? What's the hardest part of your day today? If you normalize those kinds of questions and those kinds of vulnerable offerings, then there's room, especially if you turn your phone off, especially if you're not trying to do 20 things at once, there's room for somebody to say, one of your kids to say, I don't know why I don't have any good friends. I'm hanging out with people all the time, but I don't have anybody who really is what I would call a real friend. That is a conversation starter. And that conversation starts very often in our home with one or two of our children. Somebody's always going through something where they're saying, I feel really alone. I feel misunderstood. I'm not sure where I belong. And there's got to be room for that conversation. And so I'd say, the fact that I get on FaceTime with my 22-year-old who's in final semester of mechanical engineering graduate school. He's getting his master's in some crazy nuclear such and such. But he, thermodynamics, something like that.
That's impressive. That is
What is it?
incredibly
He's many
impressive.
states away. And the only reason why I say we can hop on FaceTime and he can be making dinner and we can be chatting, but not just about what we did, but how we're feeling and what's going on. And he's really a friend now that I still give counsel to. He still sees me and calls me mom. It's not like we're peers, but we really are friends. He really is one of my very best friends. And the reason why we can do that now is because it's not that we just suddenly started that when he became an adult and moved into an apartment. It's that there's years of cultivation of saying, this ordinary Tuesday afternoon matters. And we're going to take this drive and go pick up missing groceries for dinner, that we just need to fill in with a few things. We're going to take this time to make it a time where we connect. And so it pays off, but it's little by little choices, one day at a time.
I want to go back to something you said. I feel like this is important because I've been finding myself here recently and catching myself while it's happening, like, wait, this is not working. But you said that time, the shoulder to shoulder time, which I think is with any of our kids, but especially our boys, is so important. When you're driving in the car, especially, those are the best times with our son right now. It's so easy to want to ask all the questions that, like you said, make us feel better. Are you doing all your assignments? How are your grades? How are, and wanting to make sure everything's fine. And I think especially with our boys, we drive them crazy when we do that. And I love that you highlighted that is so much more about the parent than it is about the child. And that's not the time to do that. And I think that's what we're learning in real time with our sons. What I'm learning, I'll say that. I think Brooke does that more naturally as his dad. But he went from being homeschooled for a very long time to being in public school. And so I have so many questions about how he's doing and how all the practical things are
And
going.
those are valid. I mean, you do need
Yes.
to ask those questions, but choosing when,
Yes.
right?
Yes. And finding when I just open up the space, like you're saying, or I'm ready when he's giving the keys that he's in a space where he wants to talk. It's this, I feel like as they get older, you're constantly looking for ways to see them and to be present when they're ready. But it's a little more on their terms
Absolutely.
than it was than maybe when they were younger, where there's those constant bids for connection all day long. There's still the bids for connection. They just look different, and you have to be moving slow enough to be able to catch them.
And I
And
think,
it's,
can I just jump in and real quick
yeah.
and say, I think I used to, because I wholeheartedly agree with exactly the way you just described it, but I used to think of that as meaning that as mama, and if you're watching on, you can see my expression, but sometimes I would imagine that that meant like I would stand by really like kind of wringing my hands, kind of like, how do I make myself really likable to my kids? And how do I walk on eggshells and make sure like I'm the cool mom? And I just
You're
want to say,
cool.
I actually
Hey,
don't
Ruth, you're cool.
Thanks.
They do say that, so I receive it. But my point is, I think one of the things I want to clarify about that is that giving them space and waiting for a teachable moment or waiting for a vulnerable moment, doesn't mean that I think the only thing I would, it's not even like I'm saying I'm changing what or pushing back on what you said about on their terms. I think you're right in saying it is a lot of it is that they are, will lead it. But I think as parents, we're not saying, hey, we don't know how to lead anymore. I don't think that's
Yes.
what you're saying either.
Yes.
The, on their terms does not mean, hey, I just sit back and just wait for when they're like, I want
Yes.
you, mom, now. You know, I've got time. Everybody stood
Yes.
me up and I don't have a party to go to. So now I'll, no, that's not really the case. I think
Yeah.
as a parent, you can still say, hey, I am available this afternoon and I'd like you to go with me. And I want to make sure that we spend some time together. Let's go
Yes.
grab something fun to drink and let's go hang out and talk. And if he grows real quiet, it could even be, I really value our time together. And I know you may not be totally ready to chit chat. I don't expect, but I don't expect you to just think of all the things you want to tell me, but just
Yeah.
know that like this is something that's going to keep on going. I'm never going to stop pursuing you.
Yeah.
So we have the next 2 hours. I'm not going to freak out about anything you want to talk about. And I
Yeah.
think that's leadership. So it's not like
Yes.
it's on their terms in the sense that you're not going to force them to tell you things. You're not going to force
Yes.
them to be like, I have so many things I need to share on my heart with you. You're not forcing them to say that,
Yeah.
but you're still leading. And I think
Yeah.
parents of teens, we need to remember that you don't suddenly become this like inept person sitting in your home, just waiting for them to come home and
Yes.
pretending that you're not worried. That's not what parenting teens looks like. You're not like, I'm not worried. Everything's fine. No, you say, hey, you said you'd be home and you're not home. Now, I'm describing it hypothetically. We actually haven't had that kind of issue because we don't have just a blanket curfew where it's like, do whatever you want, come home at a
Yeah.
certain time. That's not the way our family works. But for some families, if they're running in all different directions, there may be times where you really simply have to say, like, I was concerned you didn't pick up your phone, right? And it's good to lead out in those things and you can address that. So I just wanted to make sure that I
Yeah.
just say, like, be empowered as a parent of a
Yeah.
teen. Like, just know that your role changes and you may not be like the one who's saying bedtime is exactly right now. And if you don't get in bed, you know, it's not quite like that. You don't get to watch Thomas the Train tomorrow. Like it's not the same thing, but I
Those were
think there's
easier times.
still, right? But I think what we underestimate is how much, even if they don't show that they respect their parents, they don't show it necessarily. And you might even have a run-in. I have had a run-in with each of my boys at a certain age. There will always be a moment where they just really challenge your authority.
Yeah.
But what I find on the other side of it all is they always come back and tell me, I just was really struggling with myself. I was really
Yeah.
struggling with who I was. I was really struggling with sadness and fear. And I just took it out on you, but I never stopped respecting you. And so just know that you still are exactly who they need as mom and dad. And so be empowered and be proactive in it and don't sit back and necessarily expect them to come to you.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay 20 bucks a month for Netflix, 10 bucks a month for Apple Music, 5 bucks a month for Spotify and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other day, you know how you're talking about connection and driving, and it's just bringing back, this story keeps coming to my mind. I'm like, maybe I won't share it. But as you were talking, you're just reaffirming the whole thing. And essentially the other day, you know, we're always trying to encourage our kids towards things of godliness. So, you know, I'll tell Duke in the morning, hey, before you go to school, read a proverb, read a psalm. Or, and yesterday I was like, hey, read this proverb and then just pick one thing while we're driving. I would love to just talk about it. Right. So we get in the car. I'm like, hey, did you read Proverbs? He's like, yeah. I was like, is there anything that, you know, that stuck out? And he goes, no, not really. And I was like, that was the whole point. The whole point was for you to absolutely right. And I was just messing with him. He's like, well, you know, they did talk a lot about pride. I was like, oh, that's interesting. He's like, and how pride's really destructive. I was like, dude, yeah, it is. And he's like, and then he just started talking then without any prompting. He just starts saying, yeah, you know, pride is not like dudes that are arrogant at school or people that are arrogant at school, man, people, my peers do not deal with it. They just immediately reject people that are arrogant. And so it just opened up like,
That's so cool. Yeah.
Really interesting conversation of just like arrogance and culture and pride. And I was like, and then I got to the point where I was like, how do you feel? Do you feel like you're prideful? He goes, he's like, I think at home I'm probably more arrogant. And I was like, I think you're probably right. You know, but it opened up like this beautiful, weird conversation just to affirm everything you're saying. Those moments are just, that happened yesterday. I didn't even tell you.
Yeah. I love that.
That's so cool.
But, you know, just thinking through, you know, this book is beautiful. Home is right where you are. Not only did you write the book, you illustrated the book. I was telling you the story before we hit record that the other day it was sitting on our bookshelf or right on our, like right where our girls' bookshelf is. And I was getting ready to go to bed and I hadn't known that you guys had sent it to us yet. And so I saw it and I was like, oh, that's right. We're going to chat with Ruth in a few days. And I told you the story already, but I sat down and started reading it to my girls. And not only did they love the content, but they also were just like, it's so pretty. Who illustrated it? Because they're always interested. Because it's never the same person. No one rarely anymore writes and illustrates. And so when they realized you did both, and I was like, yeah, we're actually going to have a chat with her in a couple of days. Aww. They were all about it. But all to say, you're talking about this beautiful children's book, but in the context of having kids that are not children anymore, you know, your boys are becoming men. And, you know, even recently, I know you've shared it in some spaces, but I would love to just talk with you about, you know, the challenges of life and the challenges of even some of your children and versions of letting go. And I know I don't want to go into tons of detail that you share, but recently there was a huge event that happened in your life with some of your kids. And I'd love for you to just share with us what's going on and not only what happened, but also like, where are you at and how are you and Troy processing everything?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So, when I wrote this book, Home is Right Where You Are, it was inspired by Psalm 23 because my whole heartbeat was, okay, how do I write a children's book that really encapsulates where I'm at, like what season I'm in, where I'm saying, okay, I've raised my children to know Jesus the best I know how. I've given them as much of the gospel as I can from home, from our local community, from in a lot of different ways. And many of them have made a profession of faith. They're baptized believers. Some of them are still, you know, learning and growing and all those things. But as they leave our home, I was really thinking through, what does it mean to leave home? Like I say things like, I can't wait for you to come home, or home will be so different when you're not here. Our home's not going to feel the same. And yet when I think about Psalm 23 and about God declaring himself ultimately as the shepherd, I mean, Jesus, you know, the good shepherd is one of his names, but you know, the psalmist David is so clear about God being the shepherd that goes with him and that leads him to good things through hard things, in seasons where he has enemies, when he doesn't want to go through the valley of shadow, of the shadow of death. And yet the psalm ends with, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And so when I was thinking about this idea of home, I was thinking so much about how the number one thing I want all my boys to know as they leave home is that home is wherever they are, no matter whether they go overseas or they're a state away or they move back here. Home is right where they are if their home is with Jesus. If they ultimately make their greatest sense of abiding and belonging and security and assurance, if that is found in Christ, then they'll never be far from home. And ironically, that goes for mamas too, and dads.
Yeah.
That if our home is with Christ, then it doesn't matter how your home changes, how quiet the rooms are, how strange it feels if you go through loss. Whatever happens physically in your earthly home, if your home is with Christ, then nothing ultimately can shake your true sense of home. And so 3 days before the book was to launch in September 21st, the book was releasing September 24th. I was home for the first weekend that I'd been home in a long time since I was, the fall is a busy time for speaking and events and stuff. And so I was home, unpacking my suitcase and doing laundry and repacking for a book tour that was coming up. And I get a phone call, and my second oldest son, and he's a junior at college. And my third was going to the same school and was 3 weeks into his freshman year of college. And they had been mountain biking because, you know, we live in the mountains. So they took their mountain bikes with them to college in the desert, and not in state. They're in Arizona. We're in Colorado. And my son, my third son, had gone over the handlebars and landed on his head. He had a helmet on, praise God. And that's what saved his life. We now have the helmet and see how it was cracked. And it's no joke. I mean, to damage a helmet like that is a little crazy, but he went over the handlebars, landed on his head. My second son had the wherewithal to keep him really still for like an hour before search and rescue came and helicoptered him out of the desert, out of the mountains. You know, I'll just pause the story real quick because I'll finish the story, but I'll pause and say, because I'm a mama to six boys, I wasn't immediately alarmed. Like I'm that mom that usually goes, bummer. Like, wow, you're going to be real torn up. Let's get some ointment on it. Like, I tend to say those things. I just have learned. I just don't really. And actually, we haven't had anything quite this traumatic. We've had some broken bones. We've had a few concussions. But I've never had to really, you know, deal with this. And so I was still folding my laundry while Troy was on the phone with my son, as we're hearing, oh, he's going to the ER. And even then I was worried, but I wasn't getting on a flight yet. And, but we get on FaceTime with them, and the ER doc says, are you mom and dad? You guys are going to need to get on a flight. We have to transfer him to a more intensive trauma unit because we can't even deal with his injuries. And so when you get that kind of news, you realize like, oh, okay, this is not like a, you know, this is not something you can just like put a little ointment and a Band-Aid on and or just, you know, heal up a little bit. So we caught the first flight we could out. And what resulted was he had multiple fractures in his spine, broken ribs, blood in his eye, rocks in his ears. He had nerve damage, but his spine was also twisted. And so the surgery was quite complicated. It was one where it's not necessarily unheard of. It's pretty routine for spinal injuries, but because of his specific injury and his specific anatomy, there were some complications that actually resulted in the neurosurgeon coming in and telling us that he wasn't positive if he would walk. And so we were in that kind of scenario for a whole day. And it wasn't for it wasn't until hours later after he came out of the OR that we were able to see signs and evidence that he actually could move his fingers and his toes. And so obviously we were rejoicing and beside ourselves. But, you know, that week in the ICU, of course, my book tour was canceled, of course. And the reason why the internet heard about it, because something like this, I usually would have probably kept private and just worked through it personally. But because I was in the middle of a book launch. We were doing a countdown at the time, even. And I went online with a post and just asked for prayer and ultimately said, hey, my executive director is going to run the whole thing. So if you see any posts, because I'm going to do right by my publishers. And they were so gracious. But I was like, we're so close. We're literally at the finish line here. Yeah. My executive director was going to run the whole thing. And so the book obviously launched just fine. Everything went just fine. The book tour was gracious, as the places that were supposed to host me were all gracious. Of course, everybody was kind and patient. When you're in the hospital and you're facing, you're just sitting there thinking, this is not this is not how it was supposed to happen. Like, this is not how your freshman year of college is supposed to go. I was so stunned to find myself in the ICU living out the message of this book that I didn't get to launch in person. I was shocked to realize, like, I had a book tour 3 days later where I get to, like, where I was supposed to celebrate home is right where you are. Hey, parents, hey, kiddos, realize that when you make your home with Jesus, it doesn't matter what comes your way in life, you will always be safe and secure and at home. And ultimately, your ultimate comfort will always be secure when you make your home with Jesus. And I'm sitting by myself in the ICU while Troy goes and runs some errands and gets us some food. And I have a really stark realization that the Lord saw fit to have me live out the message behind the scenes, not on camera, not in front of crowds, but to really lean into Psalm 23, lean into the God who shepherds and carries me and my son and my family. Like, we're like a lamb that can't walk, and he's just carrying us, you know, just carrying us, and not allowing us to be harmed, even if we're going through hard. We were going through really hard, but we weren't harmed, and we weren't. And even if the story had turned out differently, we knew that it was still for our good. And so that our shepherd wasn't going to harm us. He was giving us hard to walk through. And we couldn't have predicted the fact that even though there were good reports as they came, like, I mean, he was released a week later to ultimately come home and recover here. But the weeks following were actually even harder. They were harder because of the pain of the mind games that play in the mind of a 18-year-old when he's suffering, the mind games playing in the mind of a mom who's suffering, you know, like all the things that you're wrestling. And so, surprisingly, I don't know why I would have been surprised that God would choose to give me such a intimate encounter with the message of Psalm 23 and of the book in a way that really helped me recognize and stand behind the very words that you just read to me from the introduction, that it's gut-wrenching and it's wonderful, but it's letting go and knowing that God loves your children more than you do, and that there's nowhere they can go that's out of the care of God, their Savior, their Creator. Like, they're not out of His care if you ultimately entrust them to the Lord and not to your own devices. Because I couldn't be there. I wasn't there when he fell. I wasn't there when he crashed. I couldn't be there to take on the pain for him, but I knew God was with him. And, that's a message I keep on learning. And I can gratefully give the update that he's doing really well. There are no more rocks in his ears. It only took about 6 weeks and a few different ENTs to finally flush out every little bit of rock that was in his ear.
Wow.
He can see well. He can see now out of his right eye. The blood is not floating around everywhere anymore. He's not fully, he doesn't have all his. He still has some nerve damage. He's not completely back to normal there. And, you know, he won't ultimately ever be 100%. I mean, he's got rods and screws in his back. There are some motions that he will need to learn to make in the future. And he's an 18-year-old boy who was bodybuilding and can't get to the gym. You know, he can't get to the gym. He can't mountain bike. And he can't wrestle his brothers. He can't do a lot of those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, shameless plug here, but I actually recorded a podcast episode with him for my podcast that we'll release in the new year. And friends, he cried his eyes out on that podcast, sharing what he's learned from the Lord. And so if nothing else, God is so kind that he doesn't waste anything, that even when he takes us through hard, he actually has so much fruit for us that we can see literally growing that would not grow and would not happen apart from the Lord leading us, shepherding us, carrying us through things that we wouldn't choose for ourselves.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, I love everything you just shared. Thank you for sharing honestly and vulnerably about, you know, it's one thing to write truths about God and to know them, which we all need to know them in our minds. but to actually embody them and live them and experience them is such a gift and so important. And what I heard you saying from your story is that God gave you, in a really difficult way, he gave you a beautiful opportunity to experience his nearness. God is so present in the midst of suffering.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Most of the listeners know we've gone through several severe tragedies with our kids and intense illness and hospital stays. And I can go right back to the hospital stays, being alone in the room with our daughter and the flood of emotions that comes and all of the processing that's happening, but God being right there with me in the room. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And I am so grateful for the gift that those moments have been in my own life. And then watching navigating suffering with the rest of our kids and the theology and perspective that they now have around it. Amen. Is so beautiful. Yeah. I can only imagine the joy you experienced as a mom recording that podcast with your son.
Exactly.
As much as you would still love to take it from
right.
him, you still would love that he has would have no long-term effects on his body. And yet to see that Jesus is using this in his life already, think of how he's going to use it in 10 years and 20 years, how he's going to use it as he parents his own children someday, if that's in his future. That is the gift of us living it out and teaching it to our kids accidentally and on purpose, and then getting to be have that relationship you talked about, like the relationship that you have with him, to be able to steward him through the hardest thing he's yet to experience in his life. The fact that he gets to recover in your home and you get to be there with him, just sharing with him the truths of who God has been to you. What a beautiful gift. I think that is like truly living out the gospel and living out our relationship with Jesus. And I want to meet your son. He sounds amazing.
Well, in the new year, let us know when. We would love to, we'll put that in the show notes. We would love to tell everyone about it. But what were you going to say? I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, thanks for articulating that so well. I think I've grown, like suddenly you become part of a club where mamas who've spent time in the ICU just understand something that you don't understand before that tragedy or before that heartache.
Yeah.
And I sent a few texts out from the hospital where I said to specific friends, hey, I'm sorry that I didn't realize what you were going through when you were in the ICU. I know we were there for you. I know we did this or that or took you a meal, but I don't think I understood what you might be feeling. And I understand it now. And so, so in some miraculous way, we even get to grow in our compassion and our love for our community. And we can one another better. We can one another, each other better when we walk through these kinds of things and can testify, not perfectly. I always say, like, it's not like throughout I was like, I have no doubts. I have no fears. The Lord is with me. No, of course you're walking through those things. You're praying through those things. Yeah. There were lots of sleepless nights. There was a lot of fear, and they still continue now. There are still things that we're working through now. Hospital bills being one of them, but lots and lots of issues that compound. And yet I think if I take this full circle, I would just say, I think the heartbeat of our God is that he wants to show us how good, just what kind of good father he really is to us. Mm-hmm, and so as his children, we get to lean in and go, we're safe. We're safe and secure. And we're always at home when we're at home with our father. Their God. And I think about how, had I not really dealt with, like the theology behind that, if I had not really like owned that, the understanding that my home is with Jesus, if I had not known that prior to this kind of suffering, I think I would have taken it differently. But I honestly think that my experience in the ICU was highly impacted by the fact that it was already a done deal in my mind that nothing could take me or my family or my child away from the care of God, and that the true belonging of home was secure no matter what happens. And so it's a tall order for this little children's book to to inspire that much, but I hope that if somebody's listening to this conversation today, and whether they are walking through something really difficult or they realize that maybe they're not quite prepared to walk through something really difficult, mm-hmm. that maybe this book can serve twofold. One, as just a wonderful, sweet, happy, warm reminder that both moms and dads and children alike can make their home with Jesus wherever they go all through life. Mm-hmm. But maybe it can even be just a gentle reminder as you listen to this episode that that when we are secure in that reminder, then God can take us through hard, but that hard will even be sweet for us because we'll be really right within his care wherever we go. So I hope it's an encouragement that way.
It's so encouraging. I just, you know, as you're even saying all that, I think the best way to close would be to ask, would you just pray that in for everybody listening? I just feel like what you just said was a beautiful way. You know, it is Christmas time. It's a beautiful gift that you're giving people, even mentally, emotionally. So I just wonder if you could pray that in to close our time.
Absolutely. Father, thank you for being a good father, being the best and most caring, most all-knowing and all faithful one in our lives. Lord, I thank you that you know exactly who's listening to this conversation right now. You know the person that's going through an unexpected trial, the person that's going through heartache, brokenness in family, or disappointment in their season of life. Lord, I pray that as we've talked about just the simplicity, the simple six verses in Psalm 23 that starts with, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," meaning I will lack nothing. Lord, that you would help each one of us, especially those who are going through something unexpected or difficult or a trial that they would not ask for themselves, Lord, ever. That, that God, you would make it so real in each of our lives that you go with us, that you are faithful, that every breath that we take is a reminder that, Lord, you have purpose for us right now, right here, and that where we feel stuck and where we feel like the most challenged and hurting is not where you will leave us, that you will truly guide us to exactly where you have us, where we will be at peace and comforted, Lord. And so when I think about the journey that I've been on and the ones that these friends who might be listening in right now are facing, Lord, I pray that you would give them that same assurance that there's nothing that they face, there's nothing that they will go through, that they're going through now or will go through, that will not be under the care of their good father, their good shepherd. Be real to us in this season, God with us. Help us remember that you as Emmanuel, God with us, is not just a feeling for the season, but you are with us always, every single day. Thank you for going with us through the hard, through the holy, through the every little thing that we would choose or and all the things that we are surprised by. We anticipate all the good that you will do in and through us. In Jesus' name, amen.